श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 10 चैप्टर 18 दिस चैप्टर इज एंटाइटल्ड द लॉर्ड बलराम स्लेज द डीमन प्रलंब टेक्स्ट नंबर एवं तौ लोक सिद्धाभी क्रीडाभिश्चेरतुर्वणे नद्यद्रिद्रोणी कुंजेशु काननेषु सरस्सु च एवं तौ लोकसिद्धाभि वर्ड टू वर्ड ट्रांसलेशन इन दिस वे कृष्णा एंड बलराम प्लेड ऑल सॉर्ट्स ऑफ वेल नोन गेम्स एज दे वैंडर्ड अमंग द रिवर्स हिल्स वेलीज बुशस ट्रीज and the lakes of Vrindavan. But there is no purport, so I will go to the next verse. Pashums charayator gopais tadvane ramakrishnayo goparupi pralambogat asuras tajjihirshaya. Translation. While Rama, Krishna and their cowherd friends were thus tending the cows in that Vrindavan forest, the demon Pralamba entered their midst. He had assumed the form of a cowherd boy with the intention of kidnapping Krishna and Balaram. Purport by the disciples of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Having described how Krishna and Balaram acted just like ordinary boys, Shukadev Goswami will now reveal one of the Lord's transcendental pastimes that is beyond the range of human activity. According to Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, the demon Pralamba disguised himself as a particular cowherd boy who on that day had remained at home with duties to perform. So today we are discussing from this. Before beginning, I would like to seek the blessings of Hare Krishna. Yeah, before beginning, I would like to seek the blessings of His Grace Vijay Prabhu, senior devotee in the ISKCON movement. That today we are going to discuss about. We are discussing about this pastime of Balramji killing Pralambasur. So, the past several verses, we heard the description of how Krishna and Balaram and all the cowherd boys, they were actually playing different sports in Vrindavan with many fruits and leaves of the Vrindavan forest. And in today's verse, we see that Shri Shukadeva Goswami is describing that Pralambasur, a demon who was sent by Kamsa, he has assumed the form of a cowherd boy and he has actually joined the party of Krishna and Balaram to kill Balramji. So on that particular day, there was one cowherd boy who did not go along with Krishna and Balaram to the forest because of certain duties at home. So Pralambasur, taking this opportunity, he took the form of that cowherd boy and he has actually went to play with Krishna and Balaram and the cowherd boys. So if we see that, like Krishna killing so many demons in Vrindavan, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that all these demons are actually represent different anarthas. Krishna says in the Gita, यदा यदा हि धर्मस्य ग्लानिर्भवति भारत अभ्युत्थानाम् अधर्मस्य तदात्मानं सृजाम्यहम्. Krishna says that whenever there is a decline in religion, I will actually appear to establish religion and I will come to protect the devotees and annihilate the demons. So sometimes people when they hear such statement, they actually they think Krishna is like a cosmic constable. Something they feel that Krishna comes to establish order in this world so that we can actually continue to enjoy this world. But actually, Krishna comes to establish order in this world. But the purpose of establishing order in this world is to actually purify the, or to eliminate the disorder which is there within the heart of a conditioned soul. So the desire to enjoy this material world, the desire to lord it over matter, that shows a enormous disorder which is there within the heart of a conditioned soul. So Krishna, when he comes, he definitely establishes dharma, but that is not for the purpose of the conditioned soul trying to enjoy this material world continuously. So Krishna comes and performs his pastimes in order to attract the conditioned souls so that they give up their tendency to lord it over matter. And so that he can actually purify the disorder within the heart of a conditioned soul. So the disorder in the heart of a conditioned soul, that is represented in the form of the different anarthas. So like these demons, they represent different anarthas, and those anarthas are there in the heart of a conditioned soul. Like this, Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains in his book that this demon Pralambasur represents the desire for the opposite sex and desire for adoration, prestige and distinction. Because it's a very high topic to speak upon. But I'll try to speak something which has inspired me from the Srimad Bhagavatam on the danger of material desires. So if we see, before we go to this topic, like in this, especially this particular demon Pralambasur, he has actually disguised himself as one of the devotees, one of the cowherd boys. So that is actually that is dangerous. Like suppose a terrorist, he comes, like suppose he enters a temple or he enters a particular big organization or something. Like suppose in his shirt it is there, "I love Al-Qaeda. I have given my heart to Bin Laden." And then he has a beard and he has got some machine gun, and then he enters the temple and he says, "I want to take darshan." So immediately one will get just by appearance one will get a shock. So if a terrorist enters in the terrorist dress, then it is easy to notice that he's actually a terrorist, he's going to create problems. And suppose if a terrorist enters in a civilian dress, then you may not then it is more dangerous, because we don't somebody is in ordinary dress, we may not actually take it lightly. And and suppose if a person is looking for terrorists, then we may try to look upon the civilians, and then if somebody is having a different vision, then we may try to check. But if a terrorist actually enters in the dress of a police, then it is actually most dangerous. So here we see that the demon Pralambasur has disguised himself as a devotee. So in the Isopanishad mentions that andam tama pravishanti ye avidyam upasate tato bhuya ivate tamo yau vidyayam ratha, tau vidyayam ratha. His Upanishad says that a person who is engaged in nascent activities, he goes to the darkest region of ignorance. And a person who is having so-called knowledge and misleading others, his destination is even more dark. His destination is even more worse. So Prabhupada says this refers to the many interpreters of the scriptures, the false philosophers, and the so-called educated people who are actually misleading the common people. And Prabhupada explains in the purport that a cobra with a jewel is more dangerous than a cobra without a jewel. Cobra with a jewel attracts so many people, and attracting so many people, and finally it actually injects poison. It kills the people with its poison. So we see, if we see in the life of Srila Prabhupada, we can understand, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj explains in his book, that how Srila Prabhupada dealt with devotees who have fallen down from the practice of Krishna consciousness. So one place he explains that how Prabhupada dealt with devotees who have actually fallen from the regulative principles. So one devotee who was in the renounced order, and then he later he fell down. When Prabhupada actually met him, Prabhupada was actually literally in tears, remembering the previous services rendered by the devotee. And Prabhupada actually pleaded with him, somehow continue to practice Krishna consciousness, wherever he situation which he is there. But the same Srila Prabhupada, when he came to know about certain devotees who suddenly started creating a wrong philosophy in ISKCON, they were saying that like Prabhupada is God, Prabhupada is Krishna, and we are actually disrespecting Srila Prabhupada, and we are not giving proper respect to Srila Prabhupada. When Prabhupada actually heard that these devotees were creating this philosophy, so Prabhupada said, immediately remove them from ISKCON. In one sense, they did not actually fall down from the practice of Krishna consciousness externally, but they were actually creating a wrong philosophy and misleading people. So Prabhupada dealt with them more severely by telling them to remove them from ISKCON. But on the other hand, those who fell down from the regulative principle, Prabhupada encouraged them to continue to be in ISKCON and practice Krishna consciousness. So that means philosophical fall down is more dangerous than fall down in just in regulative principles. And another time, Srila Prabhupada was in a morning walk in Mayapur. So in one morning walk, he was actually speaking about how abortion is dangerous. He was saying that abortion means it's like you are trying to kill a baby when it's in the helpless situation. So it's like suppose a person is, you are putting a person in the room, and then you are injecting poisonous gas inside the room, and a person gets suffocated to death. He has no means to escape. And then the next day, the devotees came with the news that there is one particular so-called guru. His mother made a statement in public that I denounce my son because he is actually misleading so many innocent people in the wrong path. So I no longer accept him as my son. So when Prabhupada heard this news from the devotees, so Prabhupada said his mother should have aborted him in the womb itself. So, nonsense, like in the previous day he was speaking against abortion, but the next day it appears that he was actually supporting abortion. But actually what Prabhupada was teaching was that because this person was misleading so many people, so he was actually killing the spiritual inclination of many people. So that is more dangerous than just killing the body in the womb. So better that he should have been killed in the womb itself, that so in that way, like so many common people, innocent people, will not be misled. So we see that this Pralambasur, in the guise of a devotee, like when I was reading this this particular Isopanishad verse, when you are going through the commentaries of the acharyas, Srila Madhvacharya, he actually translates in a different way. It was interesting. He says that andam tama pramishanti ye avidyam upasate. He says that those who propagate false philosophy, their destination is definitely dangerous. They definitely enter the darkest region of ignorance. And then he says, for Vidya, he translates as those who know the right philosophy, but they do not try to preach the right philosophy, they do not try to correct the wrong philosophy, and their destination is even more dark. So that was like, when he read it, it was a little shocking. So that's why, like Prabhupada explains in the 13th chapter of the Gita, ahimsa, non-violence, means on one level it is just like not hurting others on a physical level. And Prabhupada says ahimsa on a higher level is that not preaching Krishna consciousness. If a person is not preaching Krishna consciousness, then he is actually in one sense committing violence. Coming to this point of material desires, Pralambasura represents a desire for prestige, desire for gross sex and the subtle sex. So in the fourth canto, when Sanat Kumar is instructing Prithu Maharaj, he speaks a very beautiful verse about the danger of material desires. He says, Indriyair Vishayakrishtair Akshiptam Dhyayatam Mana Chetanam Harate Buddhe Stambastoyam Ivahradat. So Sanat Kumar, he says that when the mind is attracted to sense objects, then the mind becomes bewildered, and then the mind carries away the discriminative power of the intelligence. And in this way, a living entity gets lost. It actually steals away the discriminative power of the intelligence. Just like grass at the bank of a lake, it actually dries up the water in the lake. So Srila Vishnu Chakotaku writes a beautiful purport. He says that the senses of a man who does not want to think of sense objects, but controlled by habit, thinks of sense objects, even though he is standing in the forest. So in the forest, there is no availability of sense objects. But when a person is in the forest, but when he is thinking of the sense objects, although he doesn't want to, but being controlled by habit, when a person thinks of sense objects, even though standing in the forest, he becomes attracted to the sense objects arising from his previous memories. He becomes attracted to the sense objects arising from his previous memories, and then he gets bewildered, and that meditation of the sense objects, it actually takes away his intelligence. So then what happens is, an invisible theft happens. So material desires are the original hackers. Hackers, they steal the money from somebody's account, just hacking into the account of big bank or something like that. So it's not like, they're not seen to be actually stealing money. But they're invisibly, they're stealing. So material desires, they are the invisible hackers. So the example which is given is very appropriate. It's like a water in a lake. Like you don't see that somebody is coming and pumping and then taking the water from the lake. But one fine day you see that water is completely dried up. So it is because the grass in the bank of the river that actually dried up the water. So similarly, the material desires, they actually steal the discriminative power of the intelligence when a person meditates on sense objects. So that is why in the seventh canto, when Narsingadev asked Prahlad Maharaj, you please ask me some benedictions, I want to give you some benediction. That time Prahlad Maharaj speaks a beautiful verse. He says, Mamam pralobaya utpatya saktam kameshu tair varai satsanga bito nirvinno mumukshustvam upashritah. he says that, "Oh my Lord, please do not tempt me with material disease. I am actually born in a demoniac family, and by nature I am actually attached to material sense gratification." According to Shandar Namarka, when they told Hiranyakashipu, when Hiranyakashipu wanted to actually kill Shandar Namarka, when he saw that Prahlad Maharaj is not changed, then he thought that maybe this Shandar Namarka only, they are in the guise of the enemies, they are actually trying to contaminate the mind of my son. And he wanted to actually punish Shandar Namarka. That time Shandar Namarka told Hiranyakashipu, "Actually, your son has a natural attraction for Lord Vishnu. But according to Prahlad Maharaj, he is saying, by nature I am naturally attracted to material sense enjoyment. So please do not tempt me with material benedictions. I am actually fearful of material association, and I want to attain freedom from material desires and material association, and that is why I have taken shelter of your lotus feet." So when a person, one devotee gave a beautiful example, like suppose when you are climbing on a mountain, when a person is on the bottom of a mountain, then you become amazed by the mountain, with the enormous size of the mountain. But when you start climbing on the mountain, the more you climb, the more you reach a higher and higher destination, when a person looks down, he becomes like fearful by seeing the height he has climbed. Because if he just slips a little bit, then he will actually die. So similarly, before a person comes to Krishna consciousness, when a person is not worried about material disease, because a person is ambitious to attain so many material diseases. But when a person starts practicing Krishna consciousness, a person starts climbing the mountain of purity. When a person starts climbing the mountain of purity, the more a person becomes more and more pure, he becomes more and more fearful of material disease. So Prahlad Maharaj is actually not attached to material disease, material sense gratification. Because he is in a such high level of purity, he is actually expressing his fear of material disease. Then Prahlad Maharaj says, he talks about the danger of material disease. "Indriyani mana prana atma dharmo dhritir matihi hri shri teja smritir satyam yasya nashyanti janmana." He says that when a person, right from the birth, when a person is like attached to lusty desires, material desires, then what happens? His senses, mind, life air, his soul or the body, his religion, patience, intelligence, shyness, opulence, truthfulness, everything gets vanquished because of the material disease. So Prabhupada writes in the purport, he says that material life means that one is afflicted by different lusty desires, and liberation means becoming freed from the material disease. And then he says that unalloyed devotion to the Supreme Lord is the only spiritual desire. However, to fulfill this spiritual desire, one must be freed from all material desires. That's why Prabhupada sometimes gives the example. He says that sometimes a person is practicing Krishna consciousness, one may think that I'm not making any progress. So Prabhupada gives the example. That is because like the worms are eating away the food. The material diseases are like the worms. When a person is eating nicely, but when there are worms present in the body, then the worms actually take away all the nourishment, and the person does not get nourished. And then Prahlad Maharaj, he tells the result of giving up material disease. He says that vimunchati yada kaman manavo manasi stitan tarhyeva pundarikaksha bhagavatvaya kalpate. He says that when a person gives up the material disease in his mind, then a person becomes qualified for attaining the opulences of the Supreme Lord. Bhagavatvaya kalpate. So this is the statement of Prahlad Maharaj about material disease. And again, in the fourth canto, again, there's a very beautiful section in the life of Dhruva Maharaj. When Dhruva Maharaj, after he performed austerities, when he gets the darshan of Lord Vishnu, he offers beautiful prayers. And then Lord Vishnu offers him benediction. He says that you will rule this planet Earth for 36,000 years, and then you will get to rule Dhruva Loka planet, and then you will come to my abode. And then Lord Vishnu disappears after giving the benediction. So then Maitreya Rishi explains that when Lord Vishnu disappeared, Dhruva Maharaj was returning home, but he was completely morose and disappointed. That time, Vidura asks a beautiful question, who is hearing this conversation. Vidura is saying, Sudurlabam yad paramam padam harer maya vinastaj charanarchanarjitam labdva asiddhartam ivaika janmana katam swamatmanam amanyatarthavit. So Vidura is saying, Dhruva Maharaj, he attained the rarest of all the benedictions, sudurlabam yat paramam padam harer. He attained the abode of the Supreme Lord. And how did he attain the abode of the Supreme Lord? By performing pure devotional service. Maya vinastat charana archanarjitam. Because the Lord will be conquered only by devotional service. The Dhruva Maharaj attained the rarest of all the benediction. He attained the abode of the Supreme Lord by performing pure devotional service, which is very rare to obtain for even for highly elevated people. Labdva asiddhartam ivaika janmana. He attained this in one lifetime. Iva eka janmana. And katam swam atmanam amanyata arthavit. And Dhruva Maharaj is arthavit. He is actually wise. Prabhupada explains in the purport, arthavit means a paramahamsa. One who can discriminate between reality and non-reality. One who can distinguish between what is of real substance, what is of real value in life. So if you see, Dhruva Maharaj is a person, he's a paramahamsa who is of real value. Like sometimes a person may know what is of real value, but then he may not attain what is that which is really valuable. Then a person may lament. And somebody may attain what is of real value, but he may not know that it is of real value. Then also one will lament. Like last week, going through, gave the example of the fisherman. By the touch of Lord Chaitanya, he was induced to the ecstatic love of Krishna. But then because he did not know what is of real value, he was lamenting. So how will I be able to maintain my family? Maybe I have been haunted by a ghost or something like that. So Dhruva Maharaj, he knows what is of real value and he attained that. And still he was actually lamenting. And this actually surprised Vidura. So why did he actually lament? So then, if you see the series of verses, they are one of the most beautiful verses spoken by Dhruva Maharaj, how he was actually repenting. Because we will not be going through those verses, but you can go through. But they actually, if you go through the verses, we can actually see the real substance of a devotee. So the reason is that Dhruva Maharaj, when he got the darshan of Lord Vishnu, he actually expected that Lord Vishnu would take him back to Godhead immediately. And he actually clearly expressed in his prayer that Bhaktim Muhu Pravahatam Twayimayam Prasanga. I only want the association of devotees. And he expected Lord Vishnu will take him back to Godhead immediately. But Lord Vishnu told him, you will actually rule this planet Earth for 36,000 years. And he was like completely dejected. So there Prabhupada writes a beautiful point in one of the purports. He says, in other words, every one of us engaged in Krishna consciousness must be free from material aspirations, must be careful about our material desires. Otherwise, we will also have to lament like Dhruva Maharaj. So here we see the danger of material desires, that even if we attain the highest aspiration, that Dhruva Maharaj had to actually engage the material continue to engage in enjoy their material opulences. So that's the conclusion is that, as Prahlad Maharaj says in his prayer to Narasingadev, he says that if you at all want to give me something, I pray that let there not be any growth of material desires in the core of my heart. So at least, so definitely like, we cannot get rid of material desires immediately, but at least we should not, we should see to it that at least as time progresses, that material desires don't increase. Material desires, at least they actually go in a, they start decreasing. So, and another thing which I want to, we can compare this Pralambasur. Like Pralambasur, he's actually having a demonic mentality, but he's actually coming in the disguise of a devotee. And if we see another character in the Srimad Bhagavatam, who is also like similar, some similarity with Pralambasur. So if we see the character of Shaubari Muni. But before that, when we see the verses of the Gita in the 12th chapter, Krishna says in the 12th chapter, Mayeva mana adatsva, mai buddhim niveshaya, niveshishyasi mayeva ata urdvam na samshaya. Krishna says that, fix your mind on me, fix your intelligence upon me, and you will come back to me without fail. And then he says, if you cannot do it, then practice the regulative principles of devotional service. Ata chittam samadhatum na shaknosi mayistiram. And if you cannot practice the regulative principles of devotional service, then at least work for me. Abhyasep asamartosi kartum madhyogam ashritah. And then he says, if you cannot even work for me, at least work for a good cause. So if you see, so Krishna is giving four levels. But the first three levels are basically doing something for Krishna. Fixing the mind and intelligence on Krishna, that is directly like full-fledged with one-pointed attention. And practicing the regulative principle of devotion, that's also for Krishna. And third is working for Krishna. So all these three levels are for Krishna. And the fourth level which Krishna is saying is that at least do something for some good cause. So Krishna is talking about philanthropy. And the fifth level which Krishna is not mentioning is that is basically selfish interest. Doing something only for our own self. So basically there are three levels. Selfishness and selflessness on the platform of philanthropy and altruism. And third is selflessness for Krishna. So these are the three levels. So but if you see, when you see the character of Shaubari Muni, like Shaubari Muni, he's apparently in the guise of a philanthropist, because like Shaubari Muni, when he was living in that particular lake, the fishes came that, Garuda is eating all of us, please protect us. So Shaubari Muni wanted to actually do something good for the fishes. So he was in the guise of a philanthropist. But actually, his inner attitude was, he wanted to play the role of God. He was playing the role of God. When a person is trying to play the role of God, then a person thinks that he can actually order anybody, he can correct anybody. So he was wanting to play the role of God, but in the guise of a philanthropist. So if you see the selfishness, selflessness and devotional service. But when that selflessness, the philanthropist and altruist, when he is actually having an offensive mentality, then he becomes worse than a materialist or a selfish person. So if you see, bhakti actually reverses the hierarchy. When a person possesses bhakti, then it actually reverses the hierarchy. Like Lord Chaitanya, when he met Mukunda Dutt, he asked that, can you tell me Who is the father and who is the son? Is Raghunandan your father or is he the son? So Mukundan said, actually Raghunandan is my father. Because his devotion is the basis of the devotion of our entire family. So, actually father is superior to the son. But Mukundan is saying that because of his devotional service, he is saying that he is my father and I am the son. So bhakti reverses the hierarchy, and similarly, offense to the Supreme Lord, it also reverses the hierarchy. So the normal hierarchy is selfless person is higher than a selfish person. But when a selfless person, when a so-called philanthropist who is selfless, when he is offensive to the Supreme Lord, then he becomes worse than a selfish person. Like one organization, they say that let God send calamities and we will send relief to the people. So in one sense, they are actually wanting to compete. They are trying to envy the Supreme Lord. So basically here, we see Shaubari Muni, he is in the guise of philanthropist, but his inner motive is actually trying to lord it over, he is wanting to play the role of God. So he becomes worse than a selfish person. Then if you see the life of Shaubari Muni, then he becomes like instigated by two fishes mating with each other. So even the slightest stimuli, when a person commits an offense to the Supreme Lord, offense to a devotee, then the slightest stimuli can trigger the greatest fire of lust. Like suppose, see that a small spark you see, and the next moment the whole 20-story building is blazing with fire. That will be completely surprising. Small spark of fire, and then immediately next moment you see complete 20-story building. How can it blaze with fire? In one sense, like, one cannot even distinguish between a male fish or a female fish. But Shaubari Muni, he got, by seeing two fishes mating with each other, the greatest power of lust was triggered, and he went to enjoy to such an extent that he expanded into 50 farms, and he went on to marry the 50 daughters of King Mandata, and he actually went to enjoy sense gratification. So the slightest stimuli, when a person commits an offense to the Supreme Lord, then the consciousness becomes materially inflammable, then a small spark can actually ignite the greatest fear. And similarly, when a person practices Krishna consciousness, and because of some reason when a person falls down, not because of offense, then a slightest stimulus, then the consciousness, because it is spiritually inflammable, then a slightest thing can make a person immediately attracted to Krishna. Like Krishna says in the 6th chapter, Purvabhyasena teneva hriyate hyavashopi saha jigyashur api yogasya shabda brahmati vartate. Krishna says, Purvabhyasena teneva hriyate hyavashopi saha. Hriyate means a person is helplessly attracted to Krishna. Hyavasho means like he's automatically, helplessly attracted to Krishna because of his past devotional service. Just like the example of Bilwa Mangal Thakur. He was like wanting to enjoy Chintamani, but when he went to meet Chintamani said, if only you can actually put even this much endeavor for Krishna, then you would have gone back to Godhead, something like that, she said. And that words actually, because he had practiced previous devotional service, past devotional service, his consciousness was spiritually inflammable, and just a spark was sufficient, and then he went out to become a greatest saint. So we see that Shaubari Muni, the comparison with Pralambasur is that in the guise of a philanthropist, but he's actually he was wanting to play the role of God, so he became worse than a selfish person, worse than a materialist. Of course, later he became a devotee. And another thing I wanted to compare with, like Pralambasur is in the guise of a devotee, but he's actually a demon. But we have other characters in the Srimad Bhagavatam. There are devotees who are in the guise of who are in the dress of a demon, but they are actually pure devotees. Like Vritrasura, I was trying to talk about Vritrasura. Like Vritrasura, if you compare Vritrasura and Palambasura, all the cowherd boys, they thought Palambasura to be a cowherd boy. But only Krishna and Balaram, they knew that he is actually a demon. But in the case of Vritrasura, all the demigods, they thought he is a demon. In fact, the whole universe, they thought himself to be a demon. But only Lord Vishnu knew that he is actually a pure devotee. And like talking about Vritrasura, and we'll try to see the character of Indra also. So if we see this whole episode of the Vritrasura episode, we'll try to see a few points. Like Indra, in the whole episode, he actually had four gurus. How he dealt with the four gurus? The first guru was Brihaspati. Like in the case of Brihaspati, he actually neglected Brihaspati. He actually failed to offer respects to Brihaspati. Failed to actually get up. And because of that neglect, he actually lost all the opulences. And in fact, if you see, after he gets defeated by the demons after offending Brihaspati, then he realizes his mistake, and then he starts repenting. Immediately he starts repenting, and then he speaks a verse condemning material opulence. He says that those who are beggars, they are actually much better off, because they will be in a humble position. But if a person has material opulence, they will actually, it is such a dangerous thing, a person will get puffed up and you will actually disrespect others. But after that, under the advice of Lord Brahma, he approached Vishwaroop. So when he goes to Vishwaroop, Vishwaroop agrees to become the priest of the demigods. But Indra kills Vishwaroop, because when he sees that Vishwaroop is actually performing oblations on behalf of the demons also, then he starts getting doubt in the character of Vishwaroop, and he actually kills Vishwaroop. The first guru he actually neglected to show respect, and the second guru he actually kills the guru. So if you see the character of the demigods, the main thing is that they were actually maintaining material desires. So although in one sense Indra condemned material opulence, but he did not have realization of what he spoke. So Radhanath Maharaj spoke in a class that in order to get realization, one has to perform devotional service with humility. And we must know that realization can be sustained only by the grace of Krishna. So in one sense, Indra spoke theoretical knowledge, but he didn't have realization. Or he had realization, but that realization was not sustained by the grace of... Was not sustained because he actually had maintained the material disease. And if you see the character of like Indra and Vishwaroop, so Indra, one of my god brother, he was telling that there are like four kinds of disciples. Like one kind of disciple is like a banana tree. Banana tree, that means like a disciple who is stubborn with material desires, and he wants the guru to satisfy his material desires. Like banana tree, it cannot be actually lit up. Even if you put so much of fire, because banana tree is filled with water, it cannot be actually lit up. It cannot actually burn. And the second kind of disciple is like a coal. Coal can actually blaze into fire, but it needs lot of encouragement. It needs contact with the fire for sufficient time in order to actually get fire. So similarly, a person, one may need lot of encouragement from the superior in order to practice. And the third kind of disciple is like a camphor, who is actually willing to forego his selfishness. But when the camphor burns, there is a black soot which comes. So he is willing to forego his selfishness, but he's not completely selfless, but he will perform as a matter of duty, whatever service. And the fourth kind of disciple is like a petrol. A small spark of fire is sufficient to set the petrol ablaze. That means like small instruction is sufficient to make the disciple run with like enthusiasm. So in the case of Indra, Indra is like something like a coal or a, we can say, banana tree. Because he approached Vishwaroop, he wanted Vishwaroop to satisfy his material desires. So in the 11th canto, there's a verse which says that Tasmad Gurum Prapadyeta Jigyashu Shreya Uttamam. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur writes a comment. He says that one should approach a guru only when a person is completely exhausted of all the material aspirations. So because the verse previous to that particular verse, it actually condemns all the material desires, heavenly pleasure and the earthly pleasure. So Jigyashu Shreya Uttamam means one should approach the guru only for the ultimate goal. So only a person who is actually frustrated with all the material desires, he can actually give his heart to the guru. And he writes in the purport that even if a person gets in contact with the bona fide spiritual master, but if a person maintains the material desires, then one can actually, one will not be able to take advantage of such a spiritual master. One will actually fall down. So if you see, like Indra, he got such an impartial guru like Vishwaroop. But if you see the character of Vishwaroop, Vishwaroop character is also so wonderful. Like again, we talked about four levels of disciple and four levels of guru. Like on a lowest level, a guru, he is lenient with himself and lenient with others. It means like he himself engages in sense gratification and he tells his disciples also to engage in sense gratification. And the other level is that a guru is lenient with himself and strict with others. He engages in sense gratification but he tells his disciples to practice strictly. So these are two lower levels. But on a higher level, a guru who is strict with himself but strict with others also. That means like he wants his disciples also to at a certain level. Only when a person follows certain level, then he will actually accept him. He's not willing to play a lower role. But on the highest level is, a person is strict with himself but lenient with others. He himself is strict in practice of Krishna consciousness, but he is actually lenient with others. He accommodates others. He is even willing to come down to a lower level and he's willing to play a lower role as a counselor or something like that. So if you see in the character of Vishwaroop, he was like on the highest level of a guru. He was willing to play the lower role as a priest. So usually priesthood is not taken by highly exalted people, but he was willing to play the lower role. But the demigods, Indra, because of their maintenance of the material disease, they could not understand the character of Vishwaroop. They actually beheaded, they killed Vishwaroop. So this is the second kind of guru with Indra approached. And the third guru which Indra approached is Dadichi Muni. And what did he ask Dadichi Muni? Please die, so that we can use your body. So the first guru they neglected, and the second guru they actually killed, and third guru they directly asked that please die so that we can use your body for making a thunderbolt to kill Vritrasu. And the fourth guru was Vritrasur. Vritrasur was actually, he acted as the guru of Indra because Vritrasur actually gave instructions to Indra in the battlefield when Indra was morose and disappointed. And after giving the instruction, the guru told that the guru dakshina which you have to give is that you have to kill me. So we see that Indra never expected that Vritrasur would speak such instructions. Like suppose a person is writing an exam. He's writing an answer to a particular subject and he suddenly forgets and he's taking the help of other friends, but nobody is willing to help. And at that time is morose and disappointed. I studied so hard and I thought I knew this answer and I got forgot the answer. And other friends are not helping. And he's morose and disappointed. And that time the supervisor or inspector enters and directly comes to that particular person and tells the answer. This is the answer. That is really the most unexpected, that that somebody who is supposed to supervise, if he something gives the answer. So really Indra, he was hearing the spiritual instructions from Vritrasura, the most unexpected person. So when he was hearing from Vritrasura, at one point like Indra is astonished. How can you actually speak such how can you have such a devotion to the Supreme Lord? So then he is first astonished, but he has no smile in his face. And then he smiles. So why does he smile? Because he thinks, oh, Bali Maharaj and Prahlad Maharaj, they are also born in the family of demons, but they are great devotees. So similarly, we demigods, we don't have the wealth of pure devotional service. But yeah, somebody can be born in a demon, they can be a great devotee. So thinking about Bali Maharaj and Prahlad Maharaj, he smiles. So first he is astonished, but he does not smile. And then he actually smiles. And then again he is astonished. Why is he again astonished? Because he is thinking, but in the case of Prahlad Maharaj, he became a devotee because by the mercy of Narada Muni. But in the case of Vritrasura, but he doesn't seem to be in contact with some devotees. How did he actually develop such devotion without the mercy of devotees? Then he becomes astonished. So we see that Vritrasura, so Indra had four gurus, and he actually had different dealings with the four gurus. So if we see the character of Vritrasura, like Vritrasura, if we compare Vritrasura with Dhruva Maharaj. Like Dhruva Maharaj, he also went to fight with the Yakshas in order to take revenge against the Yakshas, because the Yakshas killed his brother. And Vritrasura also says to Indra, you have killed my brother Vishwarup, and in order to repay the debt towards my brother, I want to actually kill you. But the difference between Vritrasura and Dhruva is that, although Dhruva was actually killing the Yakshas, but he got carried away by the mode of passion, and he needed to be instructed by Swayambhu Manu to actually control the passion. But in the case of Vritrasura, although it seems that he was also fighting for the same cause, but although it seems that he was indiscriminately killing the demons, but actually he was completely in pure consciousness. In fact, he gave instruction to Indra to continue to fight. So, and if you compare Vritrasura with Bhishma Dev, like Bhishma Dev, the Kauravas did not have faith in Bhishma Dev, and the devotees, the Pandavas, are fighting against Bhishma Dev, and Bhishma Dev told Arjuna, this is how you can kill me. And similarly here, Vritrasura, his own men flew from the battlefield, and the devotees, the demigods, they were actually fighting against him, and Vritrasura was telling Indra how you can kill me. So both Vritrasura and Bhishma Dev, like Radhanath Maharaj mentioned in the class, that both were actually misunderstood till the point of their death. So one should never judge a devotee. And if you see the essence of the character, so Indra, because he was actually attached to material desires, and because he was attached to worship given by his subordinates. In one class Maharaj was mentioning that this, when Indra entered, all the other subordinates were actually worshipping Indra. They were right in their part to actually show respect to Indra. But Indra actually became attached to the worship, so because of that he failed to show respect to Brihaspati. So it's something like a cashier. A person gives money in the bank. If a cashier starts thinking, oh, this money belongs to me. So that is like that. Cashier should accept on behalf of the bank. Like once an army officer went to a particular building. He went to the top of the building. And suddenly the building caught fire. Then all the different soldiers, they actually spread a net and around the building. Then one by one, all the soldiers, they started jumping from the top of the building. And then at the end, the army officer jumped. So then the people who were holding the building, they were doing salute for the army officer. And the army officer actually fell down dead. So basically the point is that, so Indra, because he was actually attached to the worship given by the subordinates, because he was attached to the material disease, he actually committed so many offenses. So, of course, whatever he spoke is like easy to speak about the thing, but like whatever he learned from actually other devotees like Gaurang Prabhu and Rajbihari Prabhu, I need to practice more than others. So I'll stop here. Let's see if somebody has any comments, sir. Any comments, sir? ग्रंथराम श्रीमद् भागवतम की जय। श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय। गौर भक्त वृंद की जय।